Listen and stream the all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5 for the only talk that matter.
And good afternoon, Freedom 106.5 FM. It is just about 7 minutes after 12. We welcome you to a very special program, The Lunchtime Doctor. Govindan just holding on for bases, are running a little bit late. And we present you a Lunchtime Doctor program. This program is featuring Dr. Safi Mohammed, our Lunchtime Doctor. She facilitates all of your questions when it comes to your health and wellness, so you could send us your questions for Dr. Mohammed. She'll be more than happy to give you the answers. You could do so via our hotline numbers 623-0106, 627-3223, 625-2257, and your questions also on WhatsApp 306-1065. Our program is coming to you live on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangeet 106.1 FM, Vibe CT 105 FM, and Sky 99.5 FM. Good afternoon, Dr. Mohammed.
Good afternoon, Govind. And good afternoon to everyone locked in to your Lunchtime Doctor. Thank you for already sending your questions. We've got a few already. As you would have heard in the news at lunchtime, today is indeed World Down Syndrome Day. But every day, just like Autism Awareness, just like Lupus Awareness, just like World Health Day, every day is to pay attention to not just our health, but pay attention to the way we treat other people. Yesterday, we put that special attention on World Down Syndrome Day and give the attention to those that feel not as included in society, especially the parents of these incredibly extraordinary children. In today's program, yes, we're going to be answering your questions, but we will put that focus particularly for parenting a child with Down syndrome, getting that diagnosis, where can you get help, where can you get more support, and that extends to parents across the board of other conditions that where children are put at a disadvantage. No child, no human should be left behind, and that's why today the theme is with us, not for us. Of course, on this program, you can send in your questions. Send in your health concerns. We already have a few that we're going to jump in right away. And send in, more importantly, what's on your lunchtime plate. What health habits you've learned right here from your lunchtime doctor, Dr. Safiya Mohammed. Over to you, Govind.
Thank you so much, Dr. Mohammed. Reminding you of our contact numbers, 627-3223, 625-2257. Those are the numbers for your calls live with Dr. Mohammed. You could also send us your questions on WhatsApp, 306-1065. So the first one, what advice could you give to my diabetic Muslim brothers and sisters on fasting during the month of Ramadan, which is quickly approaching?
That is an excellent question. And yes, to all those who tuned in, this week we start the holy month of Ramadan. It's crucially important for diabetics. In fact, this was a conversation I delivered a presentation on last year, and I believe the year before, not just to the Diabetic Association, but across the board. There are a couple things here, the most important ones. Take your medication on time, first thing in the morning, and eat a proper meal when you're taking your medication. Know that according to the Quran, and I'm not a Hafiz, but this is the advice passed on by the Islamic scholars, if during the day you feel that your health is challenged, you are very much allowed to hold off or to break the fast, and you can substitute the action of the fast by giving charity. If you want to continue with doing the fast for the whole day, just be mindful of when your sugar levels can go low, because during the course of the day, you may have episodes of hypoglycemia. What I do know a number of diabetic patients do is they fast half a day. They may break the fast with the intention and knowing their connection to their God, why they are doing so, and then they restart the fast again throughout for the rest of the evening. What I would advise is in the afternoon, when you're breaking the fast at the iftar time, please don't overload yourself with an excessive amount of sugary meals or carbonated drinks that are filled with sugar. Try to break your fast with some tea, preferably without the sugar. Here's where all that lemongrass and ginger can come in. Very useful. Try to stay away from the excessive amount of carbohydrates or the pies in particular that one tends to see on the plate. Gauge how you are feeling. Don't put your health at a risk. There are accommodations made within the spiritual scriptures if you feel challenged by health. Hope that answers the question.
Thank you so much, Dr. Mohammed. And for those just joining us, this is the Lunchtime Doctor with Dr. Sophia Mohammed. The program is simulcast on Freedom 106.5 FM, Singeet 106.1 FM, 5CT 105 FM, and Sky 99.5 FM. Your questions, send them to us on WhatsApp 306-1065. And of course, your call 627-3223-625-2257. Dr. Mohammed, good day. My husband is 45 and he's been having chest pains for a couple of years. We did an x-ray and the doctor said nothing. That he has a slight scoliosis that might be causing it. He has taken Celebrex off and on when the pain gets more intense, and it helps for that period of time. When he stops, the pain is still there. He did a further CT scan with contrast and nothing showed up. The pain is constant at this point and is more intense. We have no idea what to do or to try at this point. We're thinking of maybe going to see a chiropractor or a pulmonologist. Do you have any recommendations for us?
So definitely. The thing about the scoliosis is, first of all, understanding where that curvature is at the back, within the lumbar spine itself. Because of the movements that you would do during the day, there may be that chest pain that you're presenting with. In fact, children that have scoliosis, we actually engage them in wearing a back brace to prevent that overcurving from getting worse. And while you've mentioned the use of the NSAIDs, your non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, to ease that pain, there are a couple other things that you can do. You did mention chiropractor, but here's what I would rather you move forward with. You see, living with scoliosis can be challenging. Most likely, your physiotherapist or an orthopedic doctor will be able to guide if those changes in terms of the ergonomic support, the way you sit, some of the exercises that you can do to just have a better quality of life, and more so to help reduce that pain. You're already using one of those painkillers. I would also suggest integrate a basic level of stretching every single day. This is where yoga comes into play, or even any level of physical exercise, and of course some weightlifting. You want to ensure during the day your ergonomics is intact. And when I say ergonomics, the way you sit if you're driving, the way you sit if you're at the desk with your laptop, all of that can worsen or aggravate the situation. Hope that helps.
Thank you so much, Dr. Mohammed. This is the Lunchtime Doctor program on Freedom 106.5 FM, Singeet 106.1 FM, Vibe CT 105 FM, and Sky 99.5 FM. We'll be right back after these.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.
All right, thank you there. Govin Bass is here. Welcome to your Lunchtime Doctor, Freedom 106.5 FM. Of course, Sangeet 106.1 FM, Vibe CT 105 FM, and Sky 99.5. Good afternoon to you, Dr. Mohammed, as we return to your questions, 627-3223, 625-2257, and of course, WhatsApp at 306-1065. Good afternoon, Doc.
Good afternoon, Bees. Gosh, we always have so much traffic within the city of Port of Spain. To all those who are tuned in, if you're stuck in traffic, I certainly hope that is not adding to your stress levels. You can tune into this program and gain some knowledge rather than be stressed. So we're glad we have Bees here with us for the rest of the program.
All right, okay, let's get into some calls right now. Good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon to Bees, and special good afternoon to the doctor in house. Doc, recently I've been getting the dry mouth issue, you know, and although I drink plenty water, those water bottles, I drink at least 5 to 7 every day. So it is not a matter of not drinking water. But I don't know if my thyroid is acting up, You know, it's there, but on the back of my tongue, like, it's just feeling dry. I'll stay on the line to hear what you have to say.
Thank you so much. You know, this is one of those symptoms that we see in a lot of our patients. And here's why. Patients with diabetes, this is one of the presentations that is very common. They present not just with a dry mouth, but it almost feels parched. Also, in addition to getting your diabetes, your glycemic levels check, we also want to make sure what medications you may be on, because some of the side effects of specific medications, say if you're on a cardiovascular patient, some of the diuretics, in fact, if you've had a cold and you took an antihistamine, if those who are on anti-anxiety medications, one of the side effects of all of those medications is indeed a dry mouth. The other thing that we always check for with our patients that present with this dry mouth is if there's any sort of sleep apnea during the course of the night. So there may be some sort of blockage in that ENT passageway, be it the nasal passageway, the respiratory passageway. That will definitely dry out the mucosal surfaces within your mouth during the night, and it continues during the day. Another one, a condition that we don't see that often, is indeed one of the autoimmune conditions, and it's called Sjögren's syndrome. It is indeed where the immune system actually becomes attacks other parts of the body. That's why we say autoimmune. And it can actually attack the salivary glands within the mouth. So that's more on not as frequent as we see as in diabetes, but it is something to keep in the back of your mind. Now, I gave you a number of different reasons, because that dry mouth is not something that is comfortable to have. So I suggest take the very next step and go see your healthcare professional. I hope you took a little bit of notes. When you do go to the healthcare professional, at least you have an idea of where it might fall. But let's take that next step.
Okay, Doc, but let me just cut in. I recently did blood tests, and my kidney function is stops, you know, and all these kind of things, liver function, all these things are very good, heart, no heart problem, anything like that. But the one could probably be is I do have a little bit of sleep apnea, so I think that's the ball, but I'll go to the health center and check it out. Thank you so much.
Definitely. And I'm glad that you noted that there is a degree of sleep apnea, because that will worsen. And it not only presents as dry mouth, you can end up having vision disturbances. You can end up having headaches. It can also directly affect the heart. Now, I want to put something into perspective for all those that's tuned in. Yes, we recommend certain blood tests. But no, when the kidney function becomes impaired or your liver function becomes impaired, that means the process of the disease is pretty advanced. So I'm glad that there isn't necessarily any changes in the kidney or the liver function, but there are other tests that we can look at. We can look at as a basic blood glucose scan. We can look at the pulmonary function test, which will definitely cue in that sleep test. Most importantly, we don't always need blood tests to make a diagnosis. A proper history and exam, that's what we used to do, and that's what we're trained to do, can indeed bring about a diagnosis, and then you can start treatment. So not because your blood values are accurate doesn't mean there isn't some sort of pathology going on. I hope that makes sense, and I hope that makes sense to all that are listening. It's crucially important to have the conversation with a qualified healthcare professional, and then we're moving those steps forward.
All right, thank you very much. We have a question here I'm seeing on the WhatsApp about sleep apnea. As we just mentioned it, I thought we'd ask it one time. Exactly, if you could explain to us exactly what is sleep apnea, and the question is here, can it be treated?
Definitely. So the thing about sleep apnea is that there are several causes. Most importantly is that it can be treated based on the cause, of course. Now, when we look at the types of causes, it can be more pathological, as in the anatomical, as in the ear, nose, and throat. There may be a blockage there, a muscular blockage, or it may be neurological, which is what we call central sleep apnea. So there are actually two different types. Based on the cause is how we treat. Overarching, we tend to have patients, the wives actually will come in and say, "Doc, my husband is snoring loudly." And then the person in the morning is waking up, still feeling exhausted. So what is sleep apnea? When there is some sort of obstruction in the process of achieving that deep quality sleep or hitting REM. Like I mentioned, it could be both neurological or it could be muscular. It could be something with your ENT, the ear, nose, and throat passage. How does the person present? In addition to that loud snoring, or they may be breathing, snoring, and then stop. And that's the apneic moment. They may wake up in the morning with morning headaches. They may wake up in the morning with a dry mouth. During the daytime, there's an excessive amount of sleepiness. So by 10 o'clock, you may find the person, if they're in a meeting, they're dropping off. There's a degree of hypersomnia. They may be very, very irritable. When do you see a doctor? The minute any of those symptoms that I mentioned is presenting, see the doctor right away, because there are definite ways we can treat. First and foremost, we want to look at reducing your weight. In fact, we discussed this probably in the last episode or some last week, that a person with an increased BMI or obese person actually have a fat deposition around the upper airway, and that can obstruct the breathing. That's why we measure the neck circumference. So losing weight, exercise is a crucial part of that. If you are a smoker, smoking increases the risk of sleep apnea by as much as 10 times. It could be more than that. Because what smoking does, it increases the inflammation and the fluid retention in the upper airway for those who are smoking. Let's try our best to reduce some of these lifestyle factors. Then, of course, there are the medications that one may indeed be prescribed for you. And worst case scenario, then we need to go to surgery. There is treatment, there's correction of it, but it starts with getting that proper review by your healthcare professional.
All right, great, doctor. Thank you very much. Good afternoon, doc. My feet are very dry and shreds a lot. Do you have any suggestions? I have tried so many creams, including petroleum jelly.
So first, you all know, anytime we talk about any of these symptoms, I always try to go to root cause. Let's try to figure out why you're having these dry feet. Is it that it's hypothyroidism? Is it diabetes in particular? While you've been trying some creams, that may not work if it's not treating the right factor. It may even be an eczema, as in a skin condition. Now, having those dry, rough, cracked skin does worsen your comfort level. It may be the shoes that you're wearing. It may be an excessive amount of fungal infection. So there are several things that can indeed be the cause. What you can do, so some of the simple remedies, those foot soaks help tremendously, especially if it's with some Epsom salt. And then right afterwards, you want to use either a high moisturizing factor. It could be baby oil. It could be those creams with a lot of ceramides in it. I'm not going to call any specific names. I myself have my favorite that I use every single day, morning and evening. But it's important that you take the time to not only moisturize the feet, but allow that dry, the skin itself to be removed. That's why pedicures, they all become very useful. You can do it at home if you think it's too expensive at the spa. But those simple foot soaks help tremendously in removing the areas of the dead skin and the calluses. Right after, apply a thick layer of moisturizing. It may not be the creams. You may need to do the oils and go deeper with the layers. Hope that answers the question. And to those who do have cracked feet, if you are diabetic, please make sure you're taking your medication, make sure there's a proper foot care, foot hygiene, and you're familiar with it. Hope that answers the question.
All right. Once again, folks, you're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor. Our numbers are 627-3223, 625-2257, and WhatsApp's 306-1065. Feel free to message our other frequencies, and they will forward your questions to us. Another question here. I'm 64 years old. I'm having a high blood pressure, 154 over 84. Do I need to take medication?
Yes, yes, yes. So 154 on 84. I'm sitting here, and I don't know if you all realize, I actually get palpitations when I hear some of these numbers, because I think you need to go to the ER, meaning emergency room, right away. And I hope you're not sitting at home with that value. Now, what I realize is that a lot of our population don't know what is a high blood pressure. Normal is 120 on 80. The top value is your systolic, the bottom value is your diastolic. Any diastolic, the bottom value, over 90, I get concerned. Here's why I get concerned. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke. High blood pressure can lead to a heart attack. High blood pressure can lead to clots, any part in the body, and that can worsen complications from the kidneys to the legs to the brain to the eyes. So let's try to bring that pressure down in the earlier stages. Now, yes, someone may say, well, doc, my pressure is beyond kind of 200 or 100 and I still live in. But that doesn't mean you're not doing silent damage to the rest of your body. So while the 154 or 90 or whatever the exact value is not extremely elevated, or what we consider a hypertensive crisis, it certainly is elevated enough for me to feel a level of anxiety that I need to treat you right away. So present to the health center, present to your private doctor, whoever it is. You certainly will need to start some level of medication. And at home, I would suggest cut down on the salt. You know, there's so many hidden salt in so many things that we may eat. Just pay attention. Remove some of that and you'll see in a week or two, your blood pressures will come down.
All right. And the concerning thing here too is this person actually messaged, I'm having high blood pressure. So you know you have high blood pressure. So please go get it checked out. Let's take a call here.
Don't give this doctor the high blood pressure instead worrying about you all.
That's right. That's right. 627-3223, 625-2257. Let's take a call here. Hello. Good afternoon.
Hi, BS. Good afternoon.
Yes.
And good afternoon to the doctor. Now, I have a friend. She recently, like 3 months ago, she stopped smoking. And but she wasn't sleeping properly in the first place. And since that, she has been visiting the doctor many times because it is worse now. She probably gets an hour and a half sleep or 2 hours sleep. And during the day, she's mash up in between sleeping and in all kind of cargo kind of way. And very lethargic and all that. So the medication she's taking and all that, not for sleeping though, whatever medication, she's diabetic of course, and whatever medication she's taking, nothing seems to help. And, you know, I just want to find out if there's something else she can do so that she can sleep longer. Thank you.
Thank you so much, and I'm glad we're having the discussion on sleep, because sleep affects every single function of the body. There are, when it comes to sleep, there are hormones that play a role in the quality of sleep, from serotonin to cortisol to even oxytocin. Now, you did mention she's on medications, so I'm not too sure what is the exact nature of the cause of the lack of sleep. If it is indeed, because some persons may not only be sleep apnea, as we mentioned, it can even be some sort of metabolic syndrome or some sort of complication. Now, there are medications that affect one's sleep, and that's important to note. The medications that she's on, we want to make sure that it gives her a quality level of sleep. Or it's also important she look at her sleep hygiene before moving into the space of sleeping. Here's what a lot of people do. They eat a heavy meal 1 hour before they fall asleep. They're on their laptops or their phones or their screen. And all of that plays a role on the retina, the back of the eyes, and it worsens the quality of their sleep or for them to hit REM. When we look at sleep, we look at it as a 360 degrees approach in a very holistic way. So it may not just be one thing in terms of treating the sleep deficit. It may be a few things well. I hope that answers your question.
All right. Thank you very much. Of course, today, Dr. Bean, World Down Syndrome Day. I know in your Health Plus, we'll get back to that and in a short while, and we'll talk. I'm sure a lot of parents and a lot of people may have some questions about Down syndrome being today is the day. Right. Good afternoon, Doctor. What is the ideal BMI for Caribbean people?
No, there's a bit of a twist in that question.
Exactly.
Because what we do know is that Caribbean people have a higher level BMI. But I will tell you what is the ideal BMI for all across, not just Caribbean people, okay? What is recommended by World Health. So for those who are not too sure, your BMI is your body mass index. Why do we look at our body mass index? How do we calculate it first and foremost? It's your weight, either in kilograms or pounds, divided by the height, but it's really the square of the height in either meters or feet. You can actually just type in BMI or calculating your BMI, and you will see a host of different calculators online. There are different values for different age, there are different BMIs for children in particular, but the values that we tend to look at is that we really want, based on your other comorbidities, we want to make sure that it is under, in terms of the normal range, we want it less than 18.5. Now, I was a little hesitant in giving the value there because you must calculate it correctly. Normal is between 18.5 and 24.9. So technically, anything under 25 is considered healthy. Under 18, is considered underweight. So normal between the 18.5 and the 25. Anything over 25 is where we go into an increased BMI. And that increased BMI is where we have the mildly obese. And then, of course, the higher the value means the severely obese. We've talked about obesity, the range of problems. Body mass index is just one of those calculators. There's also a body fat index that you can use, and there's also different aspects of health resistance that we look at, a health risk assessment. So it's not the only calculator. Now, just to repeat, the normal range is between 18.5 and 24.9. Anything over 25 is where we go overweight. So calculate it properly and, of course, look at it from a holistic perspective. Hope that answers the question.
All right, let's get some more questions. Once again, folks, you're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor, Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangit 106.1, Sky 99.5 FM, and, of course, Vibe City 105. Good afternoon, Doctor. My mom is 87. I took her pressure half an hour ago. 114 under 66. Is that low or good?
Now, at that age, we tend to generally see a lower diastolic, that's the bottom value, in most persons. That's okay. I'm not 100% worried. Here, when I become worried, if she's feeling dizzy with that blood pressure, if she's feeling like her world is spinning and she may even be at risk of falling, if she's also feeling fatigued, if she's having vision disturbances, as we age, the blood pressures do decrease if there isn't any cardiovascular complication. So I'm not at all worried. Most women, in fact, walking around with 110 on 60, and that's perfectly normal. It's when the associated symptoms are there is when we become concerned. Hope that answers your question.
Yes. All right, there's another blood pressure question. Hi, Doc. Good day. Is this a good pressure reading? 137. It's a dash, probably over 89. I am 55 years of age and hypertensive. I use medication TwinStar 8A10.
So for the values that you gave me in terms of being hypertensive, it's acceptable. What do I mean by acceptable? It's definitely not normal because we want normal to be under 120/80. So I would still continue to push, be more consistent with your medication, adjust your diet, because I want to bring it down a little bit lower. But for what you've shared, it's an acceptable working blood pressure. It's not overly elevated. Again, While the normal is 120 on 80, there's some blood pressures that are within a mildly elevated range that is indeed acceptable because you're already on medication. Please don't skip the medication and continue to find methods to ensure you have a healthy lifestyle habits that blends with your medication.
Let's go straight to the WhatsApps. In the meantime, folks, your calls at 627-3223 and 625-2257. Good afternoon. What can cause your scalp to hurt when you touch or move your hair? Thank you.
So that particular, no, there's several things when it comes to the scalp hurting. If it's in females that do a lot of that plaiting onto their hair, it's the tugging on the skin surfaces itself. We've had patients that not only present with pain on the scalp, but also you've seen loss of hair, alopecia, right? And in that case, you will definitely need, there's direct medications that's placed onto the scalp for that easing the pain itself. There may be other things if there's a skin disease, and that may cause the scalp not to only hurt but be a level of discomfort. So let's start with what are the associated factors, if there are any triggers in particular. I'm pretty certain there are some triggers in there because one scalp won't just present hurting like that. Hope that answers the question.
All right. Thank you there very much, Doc. Let's try for another call here. Hello, good afternoon.
Yes, please. I'm calling back. So, you know, I am 6 feet and I'm weighing 185 pounds. And when I go on my scale, I have a digital scale, it always says I'm overweight. So I Googled it just now when I heard you say that 25 is the average, 18 to 25, and it is 26.1. So am I overweight?
Right. So again, just like I said, I hope you heard when I said that the BMI is just one method of calculation. There are others because one may have a higher muscular mass and may not be overweight. So it really depends. But according to the weight on height calculation, yes, 26.1 does fall in the overweight category. Truth be told, I am very much at that level as well. And I know I have a few pounds to lose. We'll use it as a marker too, if you're either trying to lose weight, get healthier. But it all depends on what your body type is. If you have a higher muscular volume, then that may be a skewed result. Hope that answers your question.
All right, let's get another call right now. Hello. Oh, lost that one there. 627-3223-625-2257. You're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor. Hi, good afternoon, Doctor. My mom keeps complaining for the past 2 weeks about getting a pain on the right side of her temple. She keeps taking different medications for it, and it's not easing up the pain. What can possibly cause this pain?
I'm so sorry that your mom is experiencing this. Any sort of pain in the head, any sort of headache is indeed troubling. First and foremost, we want to rule out any vision disturbances, and we also want to rule out the possibility of migraine headaches. Migraine headaches can present on a unilateral, especially in the temporal area where you described there. Stress can be a big cause of headaches, but there are also much more sinister causes that can lead to one developing headaches. And if it is affecting her quality of life, I highly suggest you get that checked out.
All right, let's get a call. Hello, good afternoon. Welcome to The Lunchtime Doctor.
Yes, good afternoon. I would like to ask the doctor if you're taking medication for diabetes and hypertension and you go to another doctor and you get another medication, would you still be able to use that medication you're using for?
Thank you so much. Now, I know this happens with a number of patients. They do this thing called doctor shopping, right? I honestly don't know the different types of medication, so I can't advise if you can mix them, if you can duplicate the effects. What I would suggest is, I do hope you were very transparent, you were honest with the second doctor, so you let them know what the medications you were taking. I do hope, however, you at least stay consistent with whichever it is. If it's hypertensive medication, diabetes medication, please, if they're different. Now, keep in mind, there are many different types of a specific, let's say, anti-diabetic medications. If it is, you are diabetic, there are different types of modulators that we may use. One may be a step up. So it could be that that has happened. You may not have gotten relief for the first one, and that's why they introduce a second layer. So I suggest ensure that if you do return to your health, your healthcare professional, let them know that these were the medications you were taking before, so they know if you need to continue on any of those. At present, continue with the last set that were recommended as the second doctor, but keep in mind that the next time you return, you need to be open about all of the medication. And that's advice to every single person listening here, okay? We shouldn't do this doctor shop thing. If we are, no problem. Seek your second opinion. But make sure you let them know so that when you're home now, you're not in a position of confusion as in this case. Hope that answers the question.
Doctor shopping, you learn something new every day. All right, let's take this call here. Hello, good afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon to the doctor. I have shingles and it left me with itching, serious itching. And all the medication I've taken seems to be negative, no help whatsoever at all. Could you advise me what to do, please? Thank you.
Shingles is one of those shingles is one of those syndromes that presents with a very, very painful rash. It may be because of the virus that causes chickenpox. And yes, as you mentioned, it is excessively pruritic, as in it itches untoward. I do hope, and you did mention that you're on a couple medications. Sometimes the doctor may prescribe a steroid medication in addition to the antihistamine to help reduce that itching feeling. You definitely would need to put some layer of moisturizing on the skin to just give that calming effect directly to the skin. However, you may also need antivirals because it's a viral nature that presents or causes the shingles. We do prescribe antivirals specifically for anyone who does have shingles. So I hope between those medications you do get some relief. Hope that answers the question.
All right. Good day, doctor. I would like your advice. A diabetic person, can a diabetic person eat loads of meat on a daily basis? And is it good for a diabetic person to skip having breakfast?
So no, and another no, right? First and foremost, we're not skipping breakfast. No patient, no person should ever try to skip breakfast simply because breakfast is the most important meal, meaning it gives your body not just the enough calories, but it encourages their proper metabolic rate. With respect to the amount of meat that you want to have, let's stick to that healthy plate. I'm sure you've heard about the healthy plate, where we give a proper balance to fruits and vegetables. That tends to be 2/3 the plate, and then 1/3 is your meat source by your protein source by meat. So, of course, everything in moderation. If you're diabetic, you want to stay towards the grilled foods, the lean meats, rather than the red meats, which have a higher level of saturated fats. Keep in mind as well, most diabetic patients also may have a comorbidity and contribute to that cholesterol deposits within the arteries. So let's not make life more complicated for us. Let's do what we know is best. Hope that answers the question.
All right. Another question here. My husband was involved in an MVA, I believe that's motor vehicle accident, on the 13th of February this year. MRI showed a muscle spasm and a pinched nerve. He is taking muscle DP, Nirobine, Forte, prednisolone. But as soon as the medication wears off, the pain comes back severe. What else can he do? And it's on the right shoulder.
Right. I'm so sorry that he went through an accident. Accidents cause so much damage to our bodies. Now, do you think you basically did a really good job in describing those medications, the urobine and the prednisolone. The prednisolone is the steroid that is crucially important to just kind of help reducing the inflammation around the pinched nerve. The thing about a pinched nerve, it is really does present with an intense level of pain, and you may need to add a second or third layer of pain medications. I would suggest, if you're already on an over-the-counter pain medication, there are also muscle relaxants that can be used, and that helps reduce some of the pain as well. There's also a number of stretching exercises, even from the way you sit, the way you move. All of that can relieve any sort of the pain. So you want to prevent anything that exacerbate the pain. So some of the prevention, some of the flexibility exercises, muscle building, strength building exercises. You want to maintain a proper positioning if you're sitting in the car, sitting at the table. Also, prolonged bed rest can worsen the pain, so especially those who have a nerve compression. So if you're lying on one side, you may shift during the night to the other side, because long periods of lying down can actually increase the risk of nerve compression. So there's several things that can work at this point in time. I would suggest, please return to the doctor, let them know, or see a physiotherapist, engage in some level of exercises that can help ease the pain at the direct point where there's that pinched nerve. One person even mentioned an acupuncturist. I will stay away from that at this point in time, simply because you don't want to compromise the integrity of the nerves where it is indeed there's that compression. Hope that answers the question.
All right, just about 11 minutes now before 1 o'clock. You're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor, folks. 627-3223, 625-2257. Let's take a call. Hello, good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon. I want to ask the doctor, what causes chicken pox, and does it cause the mouth to twist?
Okay, very important question. So it's a virus that is contagious that causes chicken pox. If there is any sort of what you just mentioned there, where there's a shift of the muscles or the face twisted, that unfortunately may be a facial nerve palsy. So that's something that's almost like a mild stroke, or what we call a transient ischemic attack. The chicken pox is not necessarily the main cause of that. It may be an exacerbation of it, or if there's any sort of increased blood pressure, please go present to your healthcare doctor, your healthcare professional, because we can start antivirals right away. We can also investigate first and foremost what is the cause of that facial nerve palsy. There's also another palsy that's very common in patients who've had a history of chickenpox. It's called Bell's palsy, where the mouth or the nerves and the muscles on the face, the muscles in particular on the face, presents with that twisting. You almost see like it shifts. So please present to the doctor. There are certain measures we can take to treat it, not necessarily fix it, but definitely treat the problem.
Okay, let's get a question here from Vibe City 105. What is the best treatment for a sliding hiatus hernia?
Okay, any sort of hernia, if it's affecting, again, quality of life, we tend to go directly to surgery. If this particular slightly hiatus hernia, no, there's several types of hernia. A hernia is a projection of either a muscle area or the gut through a part of the body. Most persons are familiar with an umbilical hernia. The hiatus hernia is the one that happens in the stomach area, more so within the where part of that stomach projects back into that opening there where the hiatus is, the diaphragm. Okay, now let the surgical person who would have reviewed you really decide the level of treatment, because it depends on how much the body is compromised. Some persons can move along and not need surgical treatment with their hiatus hernia. They just adjust certain aspects of their living. They adjust the way either the way they eat, the way they the way they digest. Now, the sliding hiatus hernia actually moves up and down that chest area, and that's the one that's more common. What we tend to do is that lifestyle advice. We tend to look at your nutrition. As I mentioned, you tend to also look at how you're lying down. You don't want to go and lie down, like, say, 2 hours after you just ate or drink. You want to stay in that upright position for quite a little bit of some time after eating. Anyone with a hiatus hernia, we tend to advise as well on smaller meals. Small meals frequently throughout the day. There can be some complications with your hiatus hernia, and that's why a surgical review is important to prevent those ongoing complications.
Okay, let's have a final question here before we get into our Health Plus. We'll see if we could get some more. This question is mostly from concerned parents, right? Good afternoon, doctor. This isn't exactly a medical problem. My wife and I took my baby to a public hospital for constipation. The doctor told my wife that the hospital is for serious cases and that my wife should have carried her or baby to a private pediatrician. Mind you, our baby was constipated for 3 days. Are we paying health surcharge for nothing? But the baby is fine now. Just a concern from those parents. What is
I'm glad the person sent in that concern. Mm-hmm. You know, we hear this over and over, and it's a huge pet peeve of mine. I'm glad this was brought to the forefront, because these are the concerns that need to be addressed at a policy level and a governance level. We need to also know who are these. We do have a number of either new professionals that I don't even know if I want to use the word professional, anyhow, a new persons that are in the front line in some of the health centers, and they're not aware of what we tend to treat in the health centers. Yes, that is a concern that we consider not as serious like a pediatric emergency, but in the eyes of the parent, it is very much a concern that is serious. So I'm really sorry that you experienced that. These are the things that really a huge pet peeve of mine, and I do hope that those that are can make a change in the system, because we always have health officials listening in to our program. Note that, please send in the message as to which health center in particular, and let's see if we can move that forward. Now, we're wrapping down to the last 5 minutes of the program. Let's see if we can get a little bit in about what was discussed in our Health Plus today.
Yes. Okay, definitely. Yeah. About Down syndrome. Will Down syndrome be today?
The theme today is with us, not for us. It's so important that it starts, that advocacy starts at home with the parents. To all parents listening out there, if your child is one that has been considered by that unfortunate narrative of special needs, I want you to know that there is limitless potential within your children, and we need to switch that narrative. In fact, right here today, there's a conference happening in Port of Spain, and I actually attended the first part in the morning, and there were some Down syndrome patients from across the world. One in particular is 12 years old. She's a model, she's an entrepreneur, and a self-advocate. Those who are tuned in, join the Down Syndrome Family Network. You can get your information on Facebook. You're looking for Down Syndrome Family Network, or you can get the information in your Guardian today. It is a difficult road parenting a child with Down syndrome, and that's why support is so important. But even before the support comes, it starts with the mindset. Know that your child is capable of just about any activity, even though it might be a little bit slower because of the cognitive delays. Allow your child to do those run-of-the-mill activities. Give your child everyday tasks. Just break it up in small amounts. Just like every other child, all children deserve to be loved, and their rights deserve to be respected. Today we talked about Down syndrome because it being the 21st of March, and the abnormality in the gene, in the chromosome, is actually the third duplication on chromosome 21. So that's why it's the 21st of March, designated by the United Nations as World Down Syndrome Day. There are quite a few complications that can happen with patients who are indeed Down syndrome. However, because of medical advancement, we can pick these up from the very early, from the very get-go. And that's why early intervention is so important. Now, I don't know if there are any questions on Down syndrome, but in our Guardian today, we talked about parenting a child with Down syndrome. We talked about some of these risk factors that you want to avoid. And we talked about some of these common questions that parents ask in the clinic. One of the most common questions that I get, especially at the point of diagnosis, is, "Doc, was this my fault?" And I'm here to advise you, it's not your fault. There still has not been a pinpoint risk factor for what causes Down syndrome. It is not your fault. Remove that level of guilt. There's so many groups out there that give that support. You are not alone in this journey.
Definitely. And of course, kudos going out to all the parents out there who are sticking with their children, I know, with supporting their children with Down syndrome, and everybody rocking their socks today. But sometimes, you know, you hear things like smoking, drinking, you know, there's no really study that says that could be, you know.
There's no link to alcohol use or smoking that would lead to a Down syndrome child. Yeah. So I want to remove that. Mm-hmm. There is some associations to the age of the mom in terms of one that's over 35, and that's why all mothers, if they're pregnant over 35, we do a level of prenatal screening. So to those who may become pregnant after that age, there is a higher degree of screening that we look at to just ensure that there isn't any sort of consequence like this.
All right, and in terms of, you know, like educating a child with Down syndrome, do you know any of the institutions here that specialize in that? Or is it okay for a child with Down syndrome to go to a normal? Do you suggest they go to a normal regular
school? And this is where the conversation needs to shift. Mm-hmm. While there may be those institutes, all that does is segregate. It doesn't allow it doesn't allow inclusion, right? So while there is those special institutes, the world is moving away from keeping children in those silos. We want to ensure that even a Down syndrome, an autistic child, is integrated in mainstream education. Mm-hmm. And that gives the opportunity of other children to learn how to interact with each and every child, because each and every child deserves the same level of education. Yes, they may learn a little slower because of the cognitive delays. And while there are those institutes, unfortunately, they need funding and they're not well supported. So again, reach out to the Down Syndrome Family Network, to any parent who's tuned in, because there's a host of educational support that they can give you in terms of their workshops, in terms of the training for the parents, and they just encourage that the parents be the best advocate for the child.
All right, definitely. And of course, feel free to check out today's Guardian with the Help Plus segment, pages 24 and 25 today. Very, very informative. Thanks again very much, Doc, for today. Catch you tomorrow.
Definitely. Be safe, everyone, and remember, your health is your wealth.
You've been listening, folks, of course, to The Lunchtime Doctor right here on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangate 106.1, Vibe City 105, and Sky 99.5 FM. Catch us tomorrow at 12 noon for another edition of The Lunchtime Doctor.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.